Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Well, hello, everybody, and you're really in for a treat because I am having the most remarkable man that lives in the same community that I live in, and that is Grant Francis. He is the founder of Clean Up Westchester, and he's the co-founder of Westchester Team Challenge. Welcome to the show, Grant.
Well, thank you, Marcia. I'm looking forward to this.
Me as well, and we share a lot of commonalities, and I think that there's some real my hand goes right to my heart. You can't see that. But I think that that is something that is very special about living in a community your whole life, and or just about your whole life. So I thought we could start off by just having you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I did move to Westchester in 1942, so I've been here quite a while. It's been my first 20 years here. And then I'm at the next 20 down in Venice, where I taught at Venice High for a while. And now I'm back spending my last 40 back in my lovely village of Westchester again. I attended the junior and senior high school when it was split session, and then it later became Orville Wright. And then I went to the new high school when it first opened in 1956, and then I was the first graduating class that went through the whole school, graduating in 1959. I have four
kids.
That's
so cool.
Two of them live in town. One went to New York. One went to Hawaii. I have four grandkids and two great-grandkids. So that's kind of a little, a rough sketch.
Yes, yes. You know, it's so interesting. We like I said before, we share a lot of commonalities. And I know a couple of weekends ago, you actually had your 60-year high school reunion. And I was having a reunion that same weekend from Westchester High as we were all celebrating our 75th birthday. So, you know,
the funny thing is, mine was 65, and we did every 5 years we do our reunion, and at our 60th reunion, we had about 100 people show up. But now, as everybody's turning 80, we had a hard time getting 40 to come. So, as you get older, you know, things just happen, and they either don't like driving at night, or they don't drive anymore, they're in a wheelchair, or you know, the thing just happened. So we had a harder time getting a number of folks for our reunion.
I understand. I misspoke. That's right. It was 65. So as I mentioned, we share many things in common, including growing up here. And you mentioned Venice High School.
Yeah.
And I thought you could just tell us a little bit about that experience. After 35 years?
Most of my life there, it was a great time. I had a wonderful time, and I got very close to my students, and I still keep in touch with quite a few of them. I started teaching woodshop and stage crew, and then as time went by, I got into teaching student government and life skills as well, and like I say, kept in touch with a lot of my former students, and for many years, I would every summer I'd have a party, but to keep it so that they would know each other, 1 year I would invite everybody who graduated in the 70s, and the next year, the next summer, I would invite the 80s, and the next would be the 90s. But once COVID hit, we couldn't do that anymore. So once it was over, I thought, you know, let's just put them all together. They'll gather and sit at their own tables to know each other. So as soon as that was over, I did I did a party with all of them, and about 40 of them showed up, and we all had a great time. Open mic, and they got to share their, you know, their experiences and where they are in the industry now and the things that they're doing, and you know, having a great time. And while I was at Venice, I started a Hall of Fame And my name is on the auditorium since I spent most of my time there. Mm-hmm. I started a fundraising group for the performing arts, and they've gotten grants and money to help the arts because they're getting hit hard in a lot of the schools, so want to keep that going strong. And I also meet twice a year. In fact, we just met last week with a bunch of, we had 15 retired teachers and administrators, and we get together
nice.
A couple times a year. And we took a tour of the new school. It's actually been modernized. So a lot of the people who retired years ago, they hadn't seen the schools. We took a little tour and showed them the new buildings and so on. So anyway, it's there's a great draw from Venice High School because I had a wonderful time there. And like I say, I still keep in touch with a lot of my students and go to visit them and hear some
yes.
of the stories and some of the things they're doing. So, yeah, it was a great time.
You know, what's interesting about Venice, and this is obviously very regional and applies to us that live around here. When you and I went to Westchester High, it was Westchester High, and we had summer graduating classes, we had winter graduating classes. But over the years, and both of my children also graduated from Westchester High, but Westchester ultimately became a magnet, and so you had to choose to go there. And if you chose not to go there, your home school became Venice High School. And what's so interesting about Venice High School, because I know a little bit about that school now, it's almost like a modern-day community college. What they have to offer there is sensational. And as a Rotarian, we actually have a Rotaract Club of students from Venice High School that belong to our Rotary Club. So I too, have a connection to Venice High School as well. It's a remarkable school, truly, truly remarkable.
Wow,
and
that's I'm learning something
there
from
you. There
now,
you go.
There's a couple of things I'm still involved with at Venice High. They have a Jacket of Excellence. Jacket of Excellence is where students who exceed get a jacket,
mm-hmm.
and the jacket is sponsored by a local chamber. And you can donate money to help pay for the jackets. And either you maintain a high grade point average or you increase your grade point average or you have perfect attendance. And those are some of the things that allow kids to get their jackets.
You're right.
And the other thing that I participate in is it's an educational program. And it's primarily retired teachers, but they help current teachers with their budgets, and we donate supplies and money to assist the teachers. So there's a lot of connections at Venice, for sure, and I'm glad
you
to hear that Rotary is involved as well. That's very cool.
Well, our Rotary is Playa Venice Sunrise Rotary, and Jacket of Excellence has been around a long time. It actually started, I believe, at Venice, but when my kids were at Westchester, they're like a Letterman jacket. I have one hanging up in the closet that was my son's jacket when he graduated from high school. Enough about Westchester. I want to, because of connections, my friend Leah McKinney Buckley, she was in my high school class, and she's the one that told me about you, and that she said I should get in touch with you because you have founded Clean Up Westchester. So let's talk about that, shall we? What is
that? You know what, Marcia? I think that'd be a great idea. I'd love to talk to you about that and
how
it started and everything. And yeah, Leah's been on our team for quite a while. So the way it started is Judy, my wife, and I were in Spain, and we're walking through one of the big towns. I forgot now which one, and I saw a big park. Great big grass park, and I saw a bunch of people over there all in a circle in an organized, something was going on. I figured I got to go over there and see what's going on. So I went over and I found somebody who spoke English, and they kind of told me what it was. And they're all playing these games, local games. And I didn't really recognize the game so much because it's pretty much people who in the community knew what the games were, and some of them were running and some were throwing little balls. They're just all kinds of little games. I thought, this is great. These people are all having fun. together, and it was a community thing. So I thought, you know what? I think I'm gonna see if I can do that in our community. So that at the time I was in Venice, and then I got together with the chamber. They were doing something similar. They were doing a little cleanup project at Venice, but since I was now living back in Westchester, I thought I'm gonna take that cleanup project in our community. And so I got in touch with a couple of people here on my block and some of the people I knew in the community from other things that I have done, said, I'm going to start a little cleanup project here, and we're going to meet on this date behind IHOP in the parking lot, and I'd like you to join me. Well, that first meeting that we had, and of course that's been almost 3 years now, I think. No, a little over 3 years. It's going to be 4 in April. So we've been doing it quite a while. Okay, so we had 5 people the first time. And I said, well, that's great, but we need to spread the word, and I want you to each bring someone at the next session. We're going to do it every twice a month, every other week, bring someone. Well, now, the second time we had 15 people, and now we've been doing it, like I say, for quite a while now, 3 years. And we have like 15 and 20 people showing up every single Saturday we do this, twice a month. So it's pretty crazy that, you know, the people in our community are getting together and making things better, cleaning the place up. And we have, you know, we do major intersections in Westchester. And there's, it's a simple little project, but we keep getting new people all the time. In fact, we had a little party at my house just on Saturday night, and it was a potluck game party, and it was all the people from cleanup, and we weren't wearing our yellow T-shirts, and we weren't bringing trash bags, and we didn't have our grabbers, and we were just there. Everybody brought something, a dish to share, to eat. And we're all there to have fun. We played some games. We had some good conversation. So we met socially. So we were putting out good stuff before by contributing our cleaning up efforts. But this time we're letting our hair down. We're putting on our casual clothes, and we're having a little party. So it was a great an opportunity for all of us to get together and have a great time together.
If you were to sort of put in a sentence or two, what would you say your mission is for Clean Up Westchester?
Well, that mission is very simple. It's we're making the community cleaner. We actually we're getting pretty well known in the community, and there was a big block party here that was put on not too long ago called WHAM, Westchester Arts and Music Festival.
I was there.
And it's a huge block party, and it's we close Emerson Boulevard. There's bands playing all day long. There's a beer and wine garden. There's 40 or 50 vendors. There's 12 or 15 food trucks. It's a big deal. So they call and they says, what are the chances of you helping us out? I said, well, yeah, what do you have in mind? So we went down, I went and talked with the people on the committee, and we arranged a deal that with my people, we would come and clean the street the night before.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Just to get the Emerson cleaned up, because the vendors use the whole area from the curb all the way out for their whole booth. So the gutters being clean is pretty important. So they said, oh, that'd be great if you do that. And then we went a step further, and after the event was over, Saturday night, it closes down about 8 o'clock or so.
Yep.
What are the chances of cleaning up Sunday morning? So I went back to my people.
Oh, my goodness.
I need another crew, another bunch of you to come Sunday morning. So I said,
That's so cool.
Now, the thing is, right on the corner of where they do this big block party is a church. So if we go to clean up that area Sunday morning, we got to do it pretty early so we don't interrupt the people coming to church. We don't want
to
take their parking places and so on. So Sunday morning, we're back again cleaning up the street after the event in case people left the mess. We didn't want to leave the the street messy. Now they did actually. They had some people cleaning up as well.
Yes.
But when you clean up at night, it's different than cleaning up in the daytime when there's sun is
out. In the daylight.
That's true. So we helped at WHAM, Western Arts and Music, by cleaning up a little bit before, and we clean up a little bit after as well. So the mission is keep our village clean.
You're right, and another crossover, because our Rotary Club did have a booth there. It's right at the junior high school, behind the junior high school where my kids went to junior high, where my brother taught art at that junior high school, like you mentioned, right across from the Methodist church there. And it was very well attended, and it's another community event. And I just I think that we're so fortunate, because people have heard of Westchester, New York. We are not a city. We are a community. We live in Los Angeles. But we know that Westchester is a community that has Loyola Marymount located in it. We know that we consider LAX part of Westchester. Other people may not, but we do. And, while we've seen our community certainly change over time, it has, but we still call it home, and I think it's just a wonderful experience. And I would like to have you have an opportunity to talk about what you are doing as the co-founder of the Westchester Team Challenge. Tell us about that.
Now, you mentioned your Rotary, Venice Marina Rotary. I went to your meeting a few times to recruit your team, your Rotary team. And, of course, Hilton, you can't keep Hilton quiet. And as soon as I came there and he started talking about the team challenge being a competition with five games, he went crazy. Oh, let's do this. Yep. And, of course, I've known Gwen for many years. So, anyway, with the two of them, it didn't take much to get your team together and to come out and compete. And basically what it is, your Rotary ended up with a challenge against the Westchester Rotary team.
That's
correct. We had two Rotaries competing against each other in the team challenge. So there is a lot of great competition, but it's friendly. We're all out having
fun.
Absolutely. And the games we play are pretty. There's no contact, and it's just simply who can do things better. We play cornhole, and we do bocce ball, where you throw a little white ball out and you get your ball to get as close as you can to the little white ball. We have a football toss, where you throw the football maybe 25 yards away or something, and you try to get it inside the trash can. So if you get it in the trash can like basketball, you get more points than simply hitting the trash can.
Correct.
And we have three-legged race, and we have a lot of fun, and it's we'll be doing it again this coming summer. But it was great fun, and the teams that get together all seem to have friendly competition, let's put it that. And then there were some people that come in just a neighborhood, a couple of blocks. They heard about it, and they said, "Hey, we have some people here. Can we participate? Can we compete?" Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. There's no. We have a limit of 10. We can't, because that's just feasible for the time period. We can't. And then at the end of the day, we give out some trophies to the individuals and teams that do the best. And that's kind of and the whole thing takes place, just on one Sunday. Saturday morning. Everything's done by about noon. So it's a fun day.
At LMU. And you want to mention who your co-founder is? Because I think that's another unique relationship to the community.
Yeah, I started it years ago because, like I say, I found that same little group in Spain playing those games. So I came here and started it. But Amy Freelinger is the other person who works with me, recruiting teams, recruiting sponsors, and organizing the events and making the rules and getting people to help run the game. So she's definitely my coworker, my helper.
And did she also attend Westchester High School?
Yes.
There you go. So when did
You two are quite. I'm not going to say anything about how much younger you are.
Oh, okay,
but she was also,
I know.
A few you got out of
She's
there.
She's younger
than me
too.
I did.
Yeah, me too. So when did the team challenge? When did that actually begin?
This will be the third time we've done it. So it's
all
been
right.
two times before.
Okay.
So
and what would you say was the reason that you actually put this together? Was what was the purpose of this?
Well, I've known several folks in several groups, and I thought it would be fun to get them all together somehow. But
mm-hmm.
it's hard to get different groups together for one particular purpose. I mean, I wasn't interested in a speaker that would be in an auditorium because that
uh-huh.
would be kind of boring and what would be the purpose. So I thought, well, let's play a game. Let's do some games and have them compete to play games together. And it wasn't, my intention wasn't necessarily to get them to win a prize. It's just
mm-hmm.
out to have fun and get some exercise. So out
right.
in the open, in the sunshine. So, and everybody, they had their little booths where they all kind of got together and hung out. So it was just, the reason I did it originally was to get the groups from Westchester to have fun together. That was really the bottom line. And it didn't take, when you have an idea like that, in Westchester, it doesn't take long for people to say, sure, sign me up. I'm not, there's a lot of people that are agreeing to have fun. Let's go, put me down. If it's a day to go out and have fun and compete with some other friends, put me down. I'll be glad to do that with you.
And, it's funny because, this obviously is a podcast that can be heard anywhere. And
mm-hmm.
what occurs to me when I speak to somebody like yourself, who we have a community connection,
mm-hmm.
Somebody that's living in Philadelphia is not going to come to the Teen Challenge. But perhaps by listening to what you've done and your inspiration and your enthusiasm and living in a community within a large city, because there's community within all these large cities, that perhaps somebody's listening to this and going, gosh, maybe it starts at a Rotary Club. Maybe it starts at a Kiwanis meeting. Maybe it starts at a Chamber of Commerce. These are all organizations that are not universal just to Westchester. And we call it Westchester because that's what we call our community. That's the name of our high school. We're going to talk about the YMCA in a little bit. And so that's what's pertinent to us because you and I, Grant, share that in common, and I think that's great. But not everybody does what you do, and that doesn't mean you're supposed to.
No.
Pardon
but
me?
The funny thing is, you mentioned that after one of the events, Team Challenge, somebody gave my name to a friend, and they called me from Arizona. Said, we want to do something. We heard that you do the team challenge, and we heard that a bunch of people come out and have fun. How does that work? How did you do that? How did you start it up? And how did you get
nice.
The people to compete and everything? So I talked to them just like I'm talking to you about
mm-hmm.
how I started it out. And, of course, the key, as you just mentioned, is Westchester. It's a community. It's a little village of people who have all kind of self, we have good minds that all kind of together in terms of our wishes and our goals and our missions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked him if he has a community within, I forget, now I've even forgotten exactly what little town
mm-hmm.
or city he was from. But I said, that's a good start. Once you have a group of people in a small area and you see each other at the local Vons or Ralphs, and you know
mm-hmm.
each other by name, those are things that help this whole, the mission of community, of a group, of a village together. Once you have that, it's a lot easier to get them together to do anything, whether it's a team challenge or whether it's a cleanup project, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that was our conversation. But then once we got that taken care of, then I told him the basics of once you got some people together, then you might want to meet with them, let's say, you know, four
right.
or five people, and talk about it. Talk about the games you might want to play and how you want to recruit different people to be on different teams. So
sure.
once you start with five people, that's the way it gets going. In fact, I've started many neighborhood watch groups here in Westchester, and it starts exactly the same way. The thing is there, the impetus to get neighborhood watch groups started typically is some kind of a problem, a robbery or a burglary. We got to do something. So they'll call the police or they'll call somebody, and, well, you should start a neighborhood watch group. So I'll get a call, and I'll tell the person who originally started the whole concept, once you have five people together, tell me where you're meeting, and I will bring some papers to help you and some ideas to get it started. And so
mm-hmm.
I've done that in Westchester for a number of years. So that's the same concept. Their little village is their block, and that's a very easy place to start. So that you get five people from your block, and you all kind of know each other.
Yep.
So that's, you know, that's the way it works. And, of course, the last time I did it a couple months ago, it was on 85th Street right here.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, get your five people. When I walked in, there was like 15 or 20 people. It was incredible.
That's nice.
I said, well, you've already yeah. met your first goal. You know, you've gone well past your five. So now you can start planning your block parties and all the fun events as well. So that's what it takes.
Well, were you the originator? Were you part of the originators of the Neighborhood Watch personally?
Well, no, of the ones in
oh, okay.
Westchester. It's either Cindy
yes.
Hinch or myself. So
okay.
the two of us have started a lot of the groups. And
in
fact,
in
Westchester. I've hung a lot mm-hmm. of the Neighborhood Watch signs around the
mm-hmm,
community
sure.
as well. Once they get a group going, they want to advertise the fact that bad guys aren't allowed here. We have a sign
that's
here that
right.
proves
stay
that
away.
We have a Neighborhood Watch and stay out. This is our area.
You know, it's funny. You're bringing up so many memories for me, and we're going to be talking about the Y in just a minute, which is another one of those.
Yeah,
where
that's good.
I grew up in Westchester, and I'm putting quotes around that again. That belonged ultimately to the airport. And so where my parents lived in what was called Manchester Square back in those days, Grant, that
yeah.
was all purchased ultimately by the airport, and all those houses were removed. 98th Street School, where I went to elementary school, was removed. Airport Junior High School, where I went to, is a Hertz rent-a-car place. So a lot of things that were in my community, except for that Shakey's Pizza on Arborvitae. It's still there. When I was a kid, my brother worked
yeah.
there. You know, there have been changes within our community because we are a spitting distance to the airport. We are that close to the airport. And consequently, and you know, let's face it, a lot of people are going to be coming to Los Angeles in 2028 and because the Olympics will be here. And a lot of people will be inviting people to stay in their homes to do such as that. But I wanted to talk about, because I know that I worked at the YMCA from 1995 to 2005 when my kids were both off to college. But you were involved in the Y long before that. And some of your experience at the Westchester Family YMCA are really just tremendous. And I thought, we've got the time for you to share those kinds of experiences
yeah.
that you had at the Y.
Good. You know, I'm going to be loved to talk about that, but you mentioned one thing about the Olympics coming to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
In 1983, I was teaching at Venice High School, and there was going to be the Olympics coming to L.A. in 84. And the Olympic Committee had already picked Peter Ueberroth to be in charge
yep.
of the Olympics, and he picked up some buildings that were empty at the time, and they were owned by Hughes, and
mm-hmm.
the buildings were right where Costco is now on Washington Boulevard.
Yep.
And it used to be Hughes Helicopter had a whole bunch of buildings there that had been empty for years. He took those buildings over, and that was his place to have his meetings with all of his people. So he needed a place to meet with those people on his board, or the volunteers, and then also to recruit as many sponsors to come to a meeting. Well, where can we have the meeting? Let's go to Venice High School Auditorium. So Peter Ubroth brought his people and potential sponsors to the Venice High School Auditorium. When I heard him talking on a microphone, it blew me away.
Yeah,
he said, I want you people to be sponsors of my Olympics. And when you do, I want you to give me $1 million to get your logo on all of our brochures, our flyers, our banners, everything. And then also, I want you to give me 5 of your top-notch people to help me run the Olympics. And they all said, I'm on. And they signed the papers and everything. Then he goes one step further. When the Olympics are all finished, you get those 5 people back. I just need them for the year. Plus, I'll give you 5 more top executives that learned how to participate and run our organization. I'll give you 5 more in return. You give me 5, I'll give you those 5 back, plus 5 you're going to gain. Now you get 10 back. So that's his premise of running the whole Olympics. And that was the first, 84 were the first Olympics that actually made a bunch of money. Typically, it costs a city to pay a lot of money to have the Olympics in their community. So that was the first Olympics that actually went in the black when it was all finished, mainly because Peter Ubroth. So when you mentioned Olympics, I thought, wait a second. So I ended up working I worked on that Olympics simply because he turned me on. It was amazing.
Wow.
The stuff that happened
is
amazing.
Something.
So I thought I'd mention Olympics since you mentioned that.
Of
that's
course.
A story.
You bet it is. You bet it is. And that's because you are a participant. Not only do you participate, but you also organize. You also lead. You do all of those elements, and but you do it with a pure heart, and I think that's inspiring.
Yeah, I love doing that stuff.
So
let's talk
about
the why.
I
started the why as a camper. I went to Round Meadow and Green Valley, and I got my rags. And loved it. Loved the whole experience.
People probably don't know what that means, so tell them what that means when you become a rag.
Yeah, it's a little ceremony. You kind of come up with your personal goals of things you want to do, maybe at camp, but more important, what you want to do back in your community, back at home, back at your school. And you set some goals for yourself of what you want to do and to make yourself better. And so as the week goes by, some of the people have met those goals and get the reward of a rag that you put around. It's just a little triangular net, like a neckerchief.
Mm-hmm.
And the ceremony, you go up to a special place, and your counselor or your mentor will tie a knot on your little triangle, and they're different colored rags, and you put it around your neck, and you wear it during the course of the time you're at the camp. And, of course, you go home and you are wearing this rag and you explain the whole ceremony and the reasons you got it and the goals you set for yourself to your family. And they, in turn, help you with your goals and make yourself better or make your family better. So it's a whole little internal get up and go and make yourself better. And it's a wonderful – they still carry that traditional life.
I was going to say they still do it. They still do that. They sure do.
Became a camp counselor because I love the whole concept, what the why was doing. I thought, well, geez, I'm gonna do that myself. I'm gonna be a leader. I want to help these kids push themselves forward and become better people. So I became a camp counselor. And then from there I became a HIWAI leader and had a group of boys who needed, they had a group at school, and they came to the Y and said, we want to form a group. So they got in touch with me and said, yeah, I'd love to do that. And I met with them, and they're essentially a bunch of nerds. So I thought, I'm going to play a little game here with them. I told them each to bring a dollar bill to the next meeting. So they had their little dollar bills, and they put them all on the table. I said, now, this is the challenge. I'm going to give you all a piece of paper and pencil, and I want you to write down the 50 states, every 50 states, in 10 minutes.
Wow.
And then if you do it, I'll give you the dollar. But if you don't, I'm going to collect your dollar. Okay, on your mark, it said go. And they're all writing and scribbling. And I said, you know, just you can do abbreviations. You don't have to write out Massachusetts. Just abbreviate. Keep writing and they're writing and they're writing. In about 7 minutes or so, one of the kids slams his pencil down, gets the paper, and he kind of kicks back and watches everybody else. And I thought, what? I thought maybe he just got frustrated, and I'm not going to do this. I quit. But that wasn't the case. Okay, time is up. Everybody put your pencils down. And I go, hey, Mark, what happened? Did you get mad or frustrated? What was wrong? He says, oh, no. I knew all the answers. My problem was, reading it took me so long, is I knew the senators, I had to figure out their states.
Oh, my God, you're kidding me.
Are you kidding? That is definitely an oh, my God.
Oh,
anyway,
man. And
so
how
that
old
was,
a kid are we talking about?
The high school, HIWAI. It's a HIWAI group.
Oh, the HIWAIs, that's right, the high school kids, right. Oh, my goodness.
Anyway,
I wonder
so
what that
was,
guy's gone on to do.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, the funny thing is, I mentioned I keep track of my stage crew kids. I did not keep in touch with those kids and find out what they did because I soon left Westchester, went to Venice, really. Had I stayed here then at that time, I probably would have wanted to, get in touch with them and get phone numbers and so on. Anyway,
sure.
So then getting back to the YMCA, of another friend of mine, John and Sue Hudson had a girls group, and the girls wanted to go on a trip to the YMC High Sierra camp up in the in the High Sierras outside of Mono Lake and up on up on the High Sierras camp. Anyway, John couldn't make it; he had to work, so I went with the girls. I said, this is going to be fun. So we decided we're going to go an overnight to Devil's Post Pile. So we all pile in the truck and head down to Devil's Post Pile, and we're going to do an overnight. Everybody's got their little tent and everything. And we're ready to head off to go to our temporary little camp for the night, and it starts snowing.
Oh, my goodness.
And these girls, most of them, I don't know about most, half at least, had never been in the snow at all. So we made plans real quick not to camp. We're getting out of here and going back to base camp where our tents are all set up, and we're, that's where we're going to stay tonight. We're not going to stay down here, so pack it all back up and get out of there before it gets dark and too cold. And so anyway, That trip it was a great trip, but that night was not so good. They look back now, and they'll come up with some great things that they did and the experiences they had, but the bottom line, I remember the snow. Okay, then the next thing, I went to I don't even know if the Y has a camp anymore. It's called Camp Mazumdar, and it was up in the local mountains.
Okay.
And it was right next to a very old temple, a religious temple, and there during the day, especially weekends, it would be full of people. People would come and just hang out. I don't know. I never saw a minister or a person in charge. They would just come and hang out at this temple church, But we lived, the counselors and leaders of the camp, we stayed in the, underneath down the, in the basement of the church. We set up bedrooms down there. So that's where I slept. Mm-hmm. I became the camp manager at Camp Mazumdar for the summer. So that was quite an unusual. It's a very small camp. It didn't have nearly as many kids as either the two other camps I managed, Round Meadow or Green Valley. But that was a good time. Okay, then back at the Westchester YMCA, Bill Baker. This is back in the 70s. Bill Baker.
Is that
was
Molly
in charge
Baker?
Of Molly Baker, Baker's husband. Yep.
Yeah.
And he
okay,
was in charge of Christmas tree sales. That was a
uh-huh.
big fundraiser for the YMCA. The wise men sold Christmas trees.
Right.
And I was, I had a highway group. I was a younger guy. So I got some of my younger friends to help the old wise men sell Christmas trees. And we split
yep.
the responsibilities. Well, once it was all over and we split our money, the young wise men started a hotline in Westchester. And we used Airport Marina Community Services to
mm-hmm.
train our listeners. We used the YMCA, the rooms upstairs, for our meetings, and we would train the listeners as well as do role-playing of phone calls for typically as people who had problems. They were suicidal or they're depressed or whatever. That's why they call the hotline. And at the time, there wasn't too many hotlines around. Children's Hospital had a hotline. And there was a doctor up there that ran the program, and I got in touch with him and found out how he did it and brought it back to Westchester and started our own hotline. And it, we had posters around Westchester, 645-4545. I remember that years ago. And it went,
wow.
it was like very strong for 5 years. We helped a lot of people. And it was through the help of the YMCA and Airport Marina Community Services that got the hotline going and worked out very well for a number of years. It worked out in the 70s. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So that was some of my YMCA stories, and they were really very important in my life.
But didn't you also get involved with the tree lot?
Oh, yeah, we sold
Christmas trees.
Yeah, mm-hmm. no doubt
yep.
about it. And, of course,
yep.
it's winter and it's cold and it's raining. And so, that's
yeah.
why the young kids came and helped the old guys, because it gets old
yeah.
in a hurry. If you...
yeah. Yes, exactly, exactly. Well, here's another organization that I know that you've been involved with, and that's the Kentwood Players. And,
oh, yeah.
and tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, I'd love to do that. It started at, obviously, Kentwood Elementary School right down the street. And my mom and Jan Markham were the leaders of an after-school program.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was is the kids that went to the school met after school in theater, and we put on little shows, little plays. So the show that we did apparently was so good that we took the whole show from Kentwood Elementary School to where the Kohl's is right now, used
mm-hmm.
to be a Mill Irons and then a Broadway.
Broadway.
And there used to be a mm-hmm. ramp that went up to the top
yep.
or a parking lot. Well, there's a restaurant up there as well.
Yep.
So
mm-hmm.
we went to that restaurant and put on a show for the business people of Westchester and all of the people that were in the they didn't have a chamber of commerce. They had a business district, and the
mm-hmm.
Drollingers were kind of in charge, and they had
yep.
the meetings of all the people that owned businesses along Sepulveda. So they were at this meeting, and they asked us to come and do our little show. So we did our show there for all those people up at the top of the Broadway. When we came back to Kentwood, the adults and the parents of these kids were saying, if the kids can do it, we can do it. So the adults put a show on, put something together and put a show on at this auditorium of Kentwood Elementary School. Well, that show that the adults did started the Kentwood Players. And that was back in the 50s. And so they, you know, that started the whole Kenwood Players thing. And then the first theater they had was called Hotel de Haas, and it was down on Slauson, where the freeway ends, curves down and ends right there. There's a cemetery. And
yes.
Just below the cemetery, there was a place that you could ride horses on the weekends. And
yep.
They had hay rides, and it was mm-hmm. like a bunch of, you know, horses were equestrian center. So that they had a barn there, and they called a Hotel de Haas for horses. So that was the first theater that they owned. And then there was a place in west of the high school called the Pump House. They did some shows there. And then they
mm-hmm.
finally moved to where they are now on Hendry in Inglewood, and they've been there for many, many years now. But the Kenwood Players is one of the only live theater groups in Los Angeles that operates in the black. They sell out their shows to a lot of the local groups here, so there's a lot of community support to keep the, you know, the Kenwood Players going. And then once I became a teacher in the theater on stage crew, I would come back with my students and help them with their shows, build some of the sets or do the lighting or whatever. And several of my students designed and did some creative stuff on their show, and they actually won a couple of awards at their awards
nice.
Program. And one of the awards they give every year now is the Archie Markham Award, and that was Jan Markham's husband. So my parents and the Markhams were the two of the founding members of the Kenwood Players way back in the 50s when it all started.
Isn't that something? My kids went to Kentwood Elementary School.
Sure.
I was that PTA
mom. It's still
mom.
A great school.
You mentioned Hughes, my husband, when he graduated from college in Detroit as an electrical engineer. His first job was to work at Hughes Aircraft, which we know now is where Google is located.
Yep.
I mean, things have changed. But it's interesting because my daughter, when she was at Westchester High School, performed on the stage. And that resulted in her actually getting a theater arts degree at UCLA. But
oh my gosh.
You couldn't do those things without a stage crew. They had to be able to set those things up for you with the microphones and all of those things.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how much the crossover is on what you and I have done together. It's really very very interesting.
Big crossover. And it's funny
really.
You mentioned Hughes and Google.
Yeah.
That building that is still there that Google now has moved into is where the Spruce Goose was built.
Yep. You're right.
The big and Howard Hughes actually flew the airplane, and I remember
I
when it was moved from there along Pacific Coast Highway all the way to Long Beach, where
mm-hmm.
it took its only flight. You know, that was definitely a part of history, and it included Westchester as well.
You're absolutely right. And you know, when you were at Westchester, I don't even think the Playa del Rey was all that developed at that point. Correct.
Yeah, there were some houses.
To
in fact, when I talked to, we were just talking about the other day at my reunion, when I would talk to my friends who lived in Playa del Rey, and of course their houses are gone now because it was right underneath the flight path. But when I talked to one of those people and a plane would go, I'd have to stop talking. It was so loud.
Oh,
so,
I know.
And of course, now there's no houses there, and now there's no houses. I think development because of the blue butterfly. There's something that's keeping, you know, any building going on there at all. So
that's interesting.
And of course, it's right directly in the flight path. And of course, back then, L.A. Airport ended at Sepulveda. There was no tunnel. The runway would go from Aviation to Sepulveda.
But check this out.
Progressed.
I grew up in what I called, we said, mentioned before, Manchester Square. So the boundary line, I lived on 99th Street. Century Boulevard was one block over, major block, because there were there were cul-de-sacs, and there were my parents had a home, but there were a lot of duplexes. You couldn't have your door open in the summertime to let the fresh air into your house because the airplanes were literally flying over our homes.
That's right,
because
yards away.
We were right at the runway, practically.
Yeah.
It's very, very interesting, the background of our community. But I there's something else that I know about you that I thought you might want to share, and that is, did you work at a couple of Super Bowls?
Oh, my God, yes.
What was that all about?
Okay, well, it all started when I was a student at Santa Monica City College. I had a girlfriend who was the homecoming queen, and she was in the drill team. And the drill team teacher, Mrs. Crawford, found out that I took wood shop. So she asked me if I could make some props for her drill team halftime show. I said, no problem. She says, well, could you get some guys to help you hand out our props during halftime? Well, I happened to be the president of the Continental Service Club, so I got all my Continental guys together to be prop boys for the drill team. And, of course, that didn't take any twisting of arms at all. Bunch of guys to be at the drill team, they would love that. So they all said, yeah, I'll do that.
Oh,
so I became the prop master for the drill team. And then once I left Santa Monica College and got a job at Venice High School, my stage crew became the prop boys for that drill team. Well, that led to a competition, you know, across our country. It was called Miss Drill Team. And Miss Drill Team was a competition where different colleges would bring their drill teams and compete and get trophies. Well, from that, I was providing free labor. And the people that were putting the halftime shows on were the people that got interested through watching us do the Miss Drill Team show. So my first Super Bowl halftime was the Rams versus the Steelers, Super Bowl 14 in 1979 at the Rose Bowl. And
wow.
The interesting thing about that, I had probably, 15 or 20 kids, and they were doing the halftime show, doing the props for the drill teams. So at that time, I said, "Hey guys, I want you down at the field, just a few minutes, like 5 minutes or so, 10 minutes before halftime, to get ready, get your props all ready and everything." Well, one of my guys, in fact, I just talked to him recently. He told me some of the details. So two or three of them went right down to the Ram bench and were talking to the players. And apparently, I forgot exactly whether it was offense on the field or defense, but they talked to Deacon Jones and Merlin Olsen and Lamar Lundy. They were talking to them while they're on the bench, while my guys were waiting to go out for the halftime show. They were talking to the Rams. And you think about that now, and the chances of even getting on the field,
really,
it's not going to happen. And the last one I did was just actually rather recently. It was just a few years ago. It was Super Bowl number 27. And Michael Jackson was the halftime performer.
Oh, my gosh.
That was pretty famous. So we were in charge of moving the stage. Well, there was no room at the Rose Bowl to do parking and everything. So we all met at Universal and got on buses. And the buses took us to the Rose Bowl where we did our rehearsals. So the stage was about 10 pieces of the stage that were on big wheels because they didn't want to mess up the grass. And they're all real high because the whole reason for the stage in the first place was Michael Jackson was put on a hydraulic, like a booster, and he shot up through the stage up onto the stage itself. So he was down underneath.
Wow.
So the stage had to be pretty high. It was like 8 or 10 feet high. It's not like a 3-foot stage. So each of these stage units were pretty heavy. So it took 8 or 10 guys to manipulate them. So we're out there on the parking lot, ready to bring for rehearsal, to bring our all the parts of the stage out onto the field just to practice. And then the Radio City Music Hall was kind of the producers of the halftime show. And they came and said, it's going to be dark by the time halftime comes. We need some people to run the spotlights. How many, can you give me some people? I said, well, they're all over there doing the stage. So we took a timeout. How many people, we're all out there, all the pieces of the 10 parts of the stage were all ready to come out of the field. And we stopped a minute and we said, how many of you people are from Venice High? And so a few people there and a few people there, everybody kind of stepped forward. And the guy in charge of the whole stage says, wait, you can't take all these people. You know, they're the ones that are running the stage. They're doing the whole stage. So said, okay. So I picked two or three people out of there. And at that time, I never took roll at the Universal Studios who was getting on which bus. And I didn't, once we got there, all the stage parts. I never knew how many people I had. But once they called them all out, and I go, oh, my gosh. I probably had 50 of my people there. I didn't really, I had no idea. So the whole halftime show was really based on all the Venice High stage crew students that are graduates. I mean, these are old people, not kids anymore.
Right.
So I called them all out. I says, hey, you guys want to work on a Super Bowl? And it's like, come on, are you kidding? Of course. Put me down. It's like that whole recruiting for the team challenge. You want to come out and play some games and have some fun? So anyway, that was my other Super Bowl story. And boy, did they all had fun.
Grant, you are a book. Somebody needs to be writing a book about you and these different chapters of your life. I mean, your family must be so proud of all of the, and you're so humble, but your family
must
be so proud of all of the things that you have personally been involved with that you may never know to the degree, to the level of what you've done that have inspired others to do things.
I get a lot of feedback from my former students, and they all do great things, and I love hearing the stories of their lives and the things they've done as well, and the things that they've accomplished.
I bet. Well, we didn't have this kind of social media back in those days. We didn't have Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram and all of the things that are so very popular today. Can you only imagine what that would have been like then? But, you mentioned Mrs. Crawford. She was still working at Westchester when I was there. And, I just had to get a gathering as well. And, when you belong to certain clubs, whether it's the drill team or the football team or whatever that might have been, it does give you another common, because Westchester, by the time I was there, it was incorporating a huge community from the beach, from Playa del Rey over. And it was a huge populated high school when I was there. It's wonderful to look back on these memories and recognize what we share in common. And I think that what I think that this show has provided for our listeners is just an opportunity to think, wow, I really never thought about this. Maybe it turns out that where you went to school isn't where your children went to school. Maybe where you grew up isn't where you live now. But, as reunions happen, whether they're a 20-year, a 50-year, a 60-year, or whatever, 65, whatever those years are, for those of us that are still alive, it's so wonderful to be able to get together. And I feel like this podcast was like a Westchester reunion in so many ways. And I want to thank you so much for sharing
your
story
with
our listeners. This has just been fabulous, Grant.
Oh, thank you. Maybe people can take some of these and bring them back to their place and they can thrive.
Absolutely.
And do the same things there.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. And if it wasn't for Leah, I wouldn't be having you on my podcast. And
there you go. Spread the word.
Sister, you bet. And you know, and that's what happens. And that's what gives me purpose and focus and the love of what I do, just like the love of what you do. So
right.
Thank you, Grant. I'm going to have to see you at the next team challenge. And who knows where else I might be running into you, Grant.
There you go.
But
I look forward to seeing you, Marcia. Thank you.
My pleasure. And everybody, I hope that you have been inspired by Grant's story. I know how I have. So have a great rest of your day, everyone. Happy Halloween. I have to just say I hope my Dodgers win tonight, but that's just personal.
Oh, yeah.
And so have a great rest of your day, everybody. And thank you once again
thank
for joining
you, Marcia.
Me. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Have you Googled yourself lately? Are there negative posts from an ex-employee or from a former client? Maybe an outdated news article? Search engines don't always get it right. But right or wrong, it's your reputation on the line. That's where Reputation Defender by Norton comes in. Take control with Reputation Defender. Their cutting-edge approaches help you to wipe away unwanted information in your search results. They also promote the good stuff. You can start by getting your free reputation report card at ReputationDefender.com or call 800-811-4975 to speak to an expert.